Good afternoon. Please be seated. I'm Chief Judge Bonnie Bulla of the Nevada Court of Appeals, and with me today in Las Vegas, I have Judge Michael Gibbons and Judge Deborah Westbrook. While I do not anticipate any problems because at least one of the attorneys will be participating by Zoom, I would ask that everyone be mindful of this when asking questions or responding to them. This is the date and time set for the oral argument in case number A9249 in the matter of DeSantos versus Drybellis. I hope I have said that correctly. I apologize if I have not. Participating in Las Vegas, we have Shan Winsett on behalf of the appellant, and participating via Zoom, we have Bianca Cadian Dodov, I hope I've said that correctly, on behalf of respondent. And no one is present at council table, so we will move on. Each party's entitled to 15 minutes of argument. Mr. Winsett, how much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal? Very good. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you, Judge Bulla. May it please the court, my name is Shan Winesett on behalf of the appellant Maria Dos Santos. This is an appeal arising from the family courts. We are contesting the annulment that Judge Perry granted the respondent. In her order, Judge Perry specifically stated that she relied on sufficient proof rather than a clear and convincing evidence standard, meaning she said that the Mark Drybellis, the respondent, had proved his case, that he provided sufficient proof of his case. She did not reference a clear and convincing standard, which would be the standard that the Nevada Supreme Court has established for the proving of fraud sufficient to grant an annulment. The court made no findings regarding the elements of fraud. The court made no findings as to how Ms. DeSantos had deceived the respondent into marrying her. The court did not make any findings regarding justifiable reliance, which is an element of fraud on behalf of the respondent. And also, the respondent failed to promptly apply to have the annulment. He ducked service for 5 months. They had to do proof service by publication. Almost a year had passed before he sought to set aside the marriage based upon an annulment. Getting into the sufficient proof standard that the court apparently...
Before you do that, yes. Mr. Winsett, let me ask one question.
Certainly.
Why is it important to find this was a marriage and a divorce versus an annulment? Why is that critical to the resolution of this situation?
I don't know what Ms. DeSantos' purposes of why she wants it a divorce as opposed to an annulment, but an annulment is significantly different than a divorce. And that's what she sought, was a divorce, not an annulment. And the court has a certain policies in place but that have been established for years that annulments are disfavored, that you have to prove it with clear and convincing evidence, and that it's contrary to the policies of the state of Nevada to support the institution of marriage.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So the district court order found that Mark had sufficiently proven his allegations as contained in the counterclaim for annulment. Can we incorporate those allegations by reference into the court's order?
I think that based upon what this court has said multiple times to the family courts, and based upon, I think it's the Haskin decision, based upon what the Nevada Supreme Court, it seems like there's a lot of dissatisfaction among the Nevada appellate courts regarding the family courts failing to show their work. So I think a rote reference to a pleading is not sufficient, that this court has to, or Judge Perry had to go through and establish the elements and tie those to specific findings of fact. I don't think if we were dealing with child custody, for example, that this court would accept, oh, we've received sufficient evidence to prove all the elements that go into what is in the best interest of a child. I don't see how it's any different here, especially considering that we're dealing with a clear and convincing evidence standard of proof.
The respondent has indicated that even though the district court did not use the phrase clear and convincing, that the sufficiently proven satisfies that standard. Do you agree with that? And if you do not, why not?
I do not. I absolutely do not agree to that, because based upon everything in the record that I have reviewed, based upon the district court's oral statements on the record, and based upon the court's written order, I'm not sure that the family court, when adjudicating this issue, actually knew what standard was appropriate. Clear and convincing was never stated. And based upon the evidence presented to the court, I'm not satisfied, obviously from my perspective as the appellant, that the clear and convincing standard was met in this case.
Could an argument be made that if the court had applied the clear and convincing evidence standard, that would constitute sufficient proof?
If this court were to determine that clear and convincing evidence existed in the record to support that,
then would that be sufficient proof?
I think that based upon the precedent that I've reviewed, this court wants to know that court reviewed did its due diligence in adjudicating the facts based upon the standard, and failure to address the facts and the elements gives this court no clear understanding whether the court actually fulfilled its obligation to try the facts appropriately. I don't agree that the court's statement of sufficient proof is enough to get over the hurdle, especially, you know, maybe if we're dealing with preponderance of the evidence, but that's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with clear and convincing.
I wanted to ask you about that, because in the Monahan case, we said the default standard in family law cases is preponderance of the evidence. So let's say we didn't have where the standard was clearly clear and convincing. You just said maybe this would be sufficient under preponderance of the evidence.
Well, no.
Not to the amount of evidence, but just what the standard is, because there's other standards. I mean, we just had a case earlier this year, Soldo Alessio. We were talking about the presumptions, the clear and convincing on domestic violence versus in the best interest factor. It's just the regular preponderance.
I agree, Judge Gibson, with that comment. We have multiple standards of proof. I think it's incumbent upon the district court to indicate the standard it was using, and just to suggest that the case was sufficiently proven, and I'm going to refer to the complaint, I don't think that's satisfied. I mean, we're a notice pleading state, for example. I don't know that just saying that you pleaded these general allegations is sufficient to prove your case. So I think based upon what the court has suggested, that we have presumptions, we have rebuttable presumptions, conclusive presumptions, clear and convincing evidence, preponderance, I think the district court should say what they're doing and tie that to the elements of, in this case, the fraud. What was the respondent required to prove in front of the district court? That doesn't appear to me anywhere in the underlying transcript. Particularly, we've cited case authority in our paperwork showing that the focus needs to be on what was the fraud that led to the marriage. That's where you have to look at. You can't look at how the marriage fell apart afterwards when everyone has buyer's remorse. You have to look at what did Maria Dos Santos do to fraudulently, what misrepresentation. There's not a reference anywhere in the record showing what the court said that Dos Santos did to induce the marriage. Everything was discussion of everything that occurred afterwards.
So one of the, you're alleging the court basically failed to make the necessary factual findings and legal findings in its order to support annulment, and that effectively the court didn't show its work.
Correct.
If we agree with you, would the proper remedy be a reversal and a remand for the district court to make findings? Or, as you've requested, remanding with instructions to grant a decree of divorce?
That would be my request, would be that the elements of fraud weren't sufficiently proven at court, and the court did not use the appropriate standard nor make the right findings of fact, and that in light of Nevada's public policy to support the institution of marriage, to, if the court were to reverse and remand, would the reversal should have instructions that a decree of divorce should be entered.
But wouldn't we be making those findings in the first instance? Where,
that is true.
Where you're indicating that those findings were not made by the district court, so how can we really grant that relief?
Understood. I would understand if the court if this court's decision were to remand with further instructions on the factual findings, it's particularly instruction to the district court to consider the facts that led to the marriage itself as opposed to the aftermath of the marriage. Because that's where the fraud allegedly took place. And as we point out, there's also issues of waiver of the fraud by cohabitation is written straight into the statute, but the statute doesn't say that's the only defense to a claim of fraud in annulment. There could be issues of, like in this particular case, the man trying to, after he heard about everything, understood everything that he claims happened, is still pursuing this woman, stalking her through an iPad and things like that, that his conduct doesn't look like he justifiably relied on any misrepresentation because he wanted the relationship back. He would have taken her back no matter what promises she made him. And that's those type of considerations. So I think you have to start with the fraud, the alleged fraud at the beginning of the marriage, before the marriage started, and that if the court were to remand the case, that the concept would be focus on the elements of the fraud which induced the marriage in the first place, to see whether there was actual fraud that upon which an annulment could be based.
There are questions about emails that were allegedly sent between the appellant and
yes.
her daughter. Were all of those emails after the marriage? Were they all created after the marriage?
Yes. Maria denies having even sent those emails, but I reviewed in preparation today. I looked at it. It was November 22nd or something like that. That was after the separation took place, to my knowledge.
But after the marriage as well, then.
Yeah, after they'd married, I believe after the separation is my understanding.
And it's not disputed that Mr. Drybelis, he knew that the appellant did not or needed immigration papers and needed to go through that process.
Yes, he understood that her immigration status, that her visa had expired. Yes, he knew that. And the testimony by Ms. DeSantos was that he agreed when they got married that he would help her do that. And his failure to do that also caused some dissension in their marriage. And again, the aftermath of the marriage is what the district court was looking at, not the entry into the marriage. Because marriage is one of the most conditional relationships known to man. Everyone has different reasons for why they get together. And we also cited a case which was not distinguished, where the court said there should not be an annulment if that spouse had married for purposes of immigration status, if the spouse marrying knew that was a situation, that was a consideration of divorce. I'm not saying that was the only consideration, but certainly it was something to be considered.
Thank you very much. We'll reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Respondents, counsel.
Hello. Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Bianca Kadian Dodoff, counsel for respondent. The annulment must be affirmed in this case because under the abuse of discretion review, the district court's credibility findings and Ms. Dos Santos's own admissions provide substantial evidence of fraud proven by clear and convincing evidence. The only question on appeal is whether substantial evidence supports the district court's findings of fraud by clear and convincing evidence. That's the lens this court applied in Irving, and it's the lens that resolves this case. Here, the record contains direct proof of fraud. Maria's WhatsApp messages admitting to her daughter that she married Mark for immigration papers and intended to fabricate domestic violence. The district court found that Maria concealed her true motive. She married not for love, but for immigration reasons. On misrepresentation, the court found that Maria married Mark for her personal gain, concealing her true motive of immigration benefits. That's a false representation. Concealment of intent is itself a misrepresentation at the time of the marriage. On intentional inducement, she affirmatively represented love and commitment, but admitted to her daughter that she married for immigration papers. When it comes to justifiable reliance, the court did find that Mark relied on those representations. He believed the marriage was genuine. His testimony, and even you could say his obsessive attempts to reconcile, reflected that reliance. He only realized after seeing the messages and learning about Maria's pending VAWA petition that she intended to marry only from immigration and that she intended to falsify domestic violence claims. And when it comes to harm, the court found Mark to be wrongfully arrested and prosecuted, subjected to a temporary protection order, and sued civilly for domestic battery. So these findings, together with the court's credibility determinations, provide substantial evidence that fraud was proven by clear and convincing evidence. Unlike in Irving, where no fraud could be shown, this record contains proof at the inception of marriage. And under the proper standard of review, the annulment must be affirmed.
Ms. Katie and Donoff, don't you agree that the focus really should be prior to the marriage, whether there was fraud prior to the marriage to induce Mr. Drybeldas to have married Ms. Dos Santos? Isn't that the relevant time frame we should be concerned about?
Yes, but that, in a sense, yes, but that doesn't mean that only pre-marriage evidence is admissible. In this case, her later behavior is probative of her earlier intent. The question is if it's sufficiently clear and convincing. And so in this case, her post-marriage conduct corroborates her true intent at the time of the marriage. So it does reflect back to the time of the marriage and her intent going into it.
So, counsel, you would agree that the court never actually made a finding that there was a false misrepresentation, intent to defraud, justifiable reliance, and then damages within the context of the elements of a fraud claim, correct? There's no express findings on those.
They
elements.
Did not use those exact words, correct.
Okay, are you aware of any cases where Nevada's appellate courts have implied findings of fraud that were not expressly made by the district court?
Yes, under IAMA Corporation versus WAM, the court held that when no express findings are requested, the appellate court presumes the lower court made all the findings necessary so long as the evidence supports it.
Was that a fraud case?
It was a UCC security agreement case. It wasn't a marital fraud case.
Were there any allegations of fraud in that case that the court essentially inferred or implied?
I would have to check to see specifically if there was allegations of fraud or fraud of elements of fraud. I could do that and submit something to the court in writing. but the case held for the larger proposition that the court can imply findings if the record contains substantial evidence that meets that burden.
Well, you indicated that we could take a look at what happened after the marriage to attempt to infer whether there was fraud prior to the marriage, but there are other facts as well. After the couple was separated, Mr. Drybelbus apparently tracked Ms. DeSantos using an iPad, which showed her location. He tried to continue to have a relationship with her. If he truly believed that she had committed fraud in getting him to marry her, you know, wouldn't that be a factor the court should look at to determine what actually had occurred prior to the marriage? I mean, the court could look at those facts as well, right?
It's something that the court can look at, but it's also important. People often struggle to accept betrayal, and Mark's realization was progressive in this case. He initially suspected something was wrong when she wrongfully had him arrested. When he found out about the WhatsApp messages, you know, that further confirmed his suspicions, and then it crystallized when he discovered the VAWA petition. So he may have had attempts at reconciliation, but if those were made before he had full knowledge of the fraud. And it's not, fraud in a marriage is not undone just because the victim initially struggles to accept it. What matters legally is whether Mark knowingly affirmed the marriage after full knowledge of the fraud by resuming life with her as husband and wife. He didn't. He never reestablished cohabitation. They never resumed a marital partnership. So he didn't have a waiver based on full knowledge of the fraud.
At what point did he discover the text messages?
He discovered the text messages in early 2023. It was January or February when he came in possession of them. And then it was a few months later that he found out about the VAWA petition. And then he filed for, he counterclaimed for annulment shortly after that, later in 2023.
Was his counterclaim for annulment, though, I think October 2023?
Yes, I believe.
Is that right? So at what point did he discover the VAWA petition in relation to that October date?
I don't have an exact date, but according to the testimony, it was sometime between March and May of 2023.
Assuming he discovered it in May, then he waited, June, July, August, September. He waited 5 months before speaking.
Before counterclaiming, that's correct.
Yes, okay, yeah.
Can you point to any evidence in the record that would support that there was conduct that would be consistent with fraud from the time the couple began dating in December of 2021 and then they married in February of 2022? Is there any evidence that would support any allegation of fraud during that time frame?
The fraud would be in the concealment of her intent. It wasn't until Mark was unable to pay for the immigration petition that this information started to come out. So what the fraud was in the concealment that immigration was her only motive. Meanwhile, she professed love and commitment.
You would agree that the district court, though, did not analyze the specific elements of fraud that are required to be analyzed before making a decision.
The district court did not use the specific words of the elements of fraud, but I would argue that they did consider the factors, and based on the record, their findings necessarily included the elements of fraud. The court did specifically find that Maria married Mark for her personal gain.
How do you support the statement that the court did rely upon the factors of fraud? Because there are multiple elements and there are different kinds of fraud. And that the court didn't seem to use any of the words from any type of fraudulent claim.
Because the court's order discusses the underlying evidence in the record that supports those claims. Her direct admission that she married him for immigration purposes only were the centerpiece of the court's fraud finding, and that's how the court determined that fraud existed at the moment of marriage.
Counsel, I think her line was, I married him because he was going to get me papers, but after being married, he didn't want to. I don't see the word only in there. I mean, is it possible that that could have been one of her reasons for marrying him, which is consistent with her also being in love with him as well?
I suppose it's possible.
But without a finding from the court, we don't know.
Well, I think that based on the court's statement that she married him for personal gain, that the court considered that, but ultimately did not find Maria credible in her statements that she did truly love him and want to marry him. There was a few credibility findings about Maria's testimony made by the judge, and it is within the, you know, it's not part of the appellate review to reweigh that credibility.
That's why we have to have findings, don't we, from the district court, to make sure that the district court applies not only the proper standard, which in this case for fraud is clear and convincing, but that we have an understanding for appellate review purposes what the district court looked at in reaching its decision.
The appellate review that is conducted looks at the record to see if there is substantial evidence. And if there is that substantial evidence, then the finding should be upheld. So,
take us back to the threshold question here of whether the correct standard was applied? Because if you think about it, clear and convincing doesn't exist in very many areas of the law. And in family law, it's for termination of parental rights, it has to be proven by clear and convincing evidence to meet that standard, or to invoke the domestic violence presumption so a person doesn't get custody. These are two very significant outcomes. So likewise here with fraud, if there's really a question about whether the court imposed the correct standard, that's foundational. And it's hard to say whether there's substantial evidence to support a clear and convincing finding versus substantial evidence to support a preponderance finding. And we just reversed a case a few months ago in Soldo Alessio where the court applied the clear and convincing instead of the preponderance of the evidence. And as I mentioned to Mr. Weinstein about the Monahan case, the default is preponderance. So it seems like if we don't really know, the court might have defaulted and not imposed the higher and difficult standard for the most significant decisions in family law, like termination and domestic violence perpetrator doesn't get custody. Here, it's, as was pointed out, it seems to be the policy to support marriage and not annul them unless the higher standard can be met. So in other words, it's foundational, and doesn't that undermine the argument that, well, there's substantial evidence, which we would normally do, but this is not the normal case?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
It was too long to repeat. So.
I think what Judge Gibbons is asking is, if the incorrect standard has been used to analyze the facts in the record or that were at issue below, don't we have to make sure that the district court has used the correct standard?
I understand. The court, that is something to make sure. But again, the appellate review, the standard of review looks at whether substantial evidence is in the record, not whether the court used certain words or not. So, in this case, the court cited the fraud statute. They heard live testimony and relied on WhatsApp messages, a direct admission, as the centerpiece of the fraud finding. And that's exactly the type of heightened proof that would satisfy clear and convincing, the clear and convincing standard. So I would say the absence of the phrase clear and convincing doesn't mean the wrong standard was applied. And unless the appellant can show the wrong standard was actually used, then the only review before this court is to examine whether substantial evidence supports the fraud. And in this case, I would argue that it does.
Thank you very much. Mr. Winsett.
Just a couple of notes with counsel's argument. The argument was that there was concealment of the intent, but the court made no findings of what intent was concealed, what purpose was concealed. The court made no findings that the marriage was solely for Maria Dos Santos to obtain immigration status. There certainly was no finding that she intended to purport to take domestic violence actions against him at the time that she got married. Those are all allegations that took place after. It was referenced a few more times in oral argument by counsel that the court found that she married for personal gain, but that's not a finding, it's a conclusion. And most people go into marriages for various reasons, and sometimes it is for personal gain. And not always for love. Everyone has reasons for getting married. It's kind of a cynical comment, but getting married for personal gain is a finding of nothing. It doesn't say anything about fraudulent intent. The judge's findings regarding what initiated the marriage are so sparse that I think the court cannot connect the dots as counsel is suggesting it can. There's not sufficient basis for this court to know. The court did not show its work, so this court doesn't know whether the judge did right by the parties at the time it was trying the facts. And again, the standard is not substantial evidence. It's clear and convincing, which we don't know if the court, what standard the court used. So with that, I can...
she's correct that normally substantial evidence, if it's in the record to support the conclusion, then under an abuse of discretion standard, that's going to be affirmed. But as I mentioned, there's a foundational standard, is it clear and convincing or preponderance? And that area I'm sure you see all the time are attorney fees questions. The district court doesn't always go through the Brunzell factors, but counsel provides the information to the court, and so attorney fees can be awarded, and those are affirmed even though the court didn't go through the elements as required by the Brunzell case. Correct. Is this different?
It is different because the court is assuming by the judge's signature on the order that the Brunzell factors that it's referring to, that is as conclusory as they are, that the court agrees with those factors that are inserted in there. I think there, it's kind of a little bit of a form practice, I admit, but there are facts that are stated in those Brunzell type of affidavits and the ultimate award of attorney's fees. And this court has also asked them to do the disparate income, consider incomes in Brunzell, and it's in there. Here, it wasn't in there at all. We don't know what the court was thinking when it did what it did.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.